Netcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is Twit.
Bandwidth for Ham Nation is provided by CashFly at CacheFly.com.
This episode of Ham Nation is brought to you by Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Home plays a big role in your life. That's why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. It lets you apply simply and understand the entire mortgage process fully so you can be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Get started at RocketMortgage.com/HamNation. By ICOM. For more information, visit ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. And by DX Engineering. DX Engineering offers practically everything you need to outfit your shack, plus the fastest shipping in the industry. Most in-stock items ship the same day, Monday through Friday, until 10 p.m. Eastern. For more information, visit dxengineering.com/hamnation.
This is Ham Nation, episode 345 for April 4th, 2018. Rotator Barons. Good evening. Welcome to another episode of Ham Nation. Bob Heil is not with us this week, so I'll be driving the bus. I'm George, W5JDX, right here near Jackson, Mississippi. Out on the West Coast, we've got our friend Gordon West.
Well, howdy to everyone, and hi, George. And a lot of Ham Fest this weekend, the Shenango, I hope I got that right, Valley Amateur Radio Association. Their Ham Fest on Saturday the 7th in Norwich, says New York in my notes. Also, weekend after next, April 13 and 14, Oklahoma having their state convention at Claremore Expo Center, Green City Ham Fest for Oklahomers. And also a week from this Saturday, not this Saturday, but a week away, DeVry Ham Fest in Phoenix, Arizona. So you Hamfesters, have fun. George, back to you.
Okay, Gordo, those sound like some great events there. I'm not sure how you pronounce it, but I'm sure the guy down south of me will know. Is it Oklahomers or Oklahomians, Don?
Okies.
That's Okies. What I was going to say.
Okies. That actually was a derogatory term. By the people in California, Gordon, who from the Dust Bowl, when all the Oklahoma people settled in California, they you know, oh, the Okies are coming. Now, that was a horribly derogatory. Listen, I'm an Okie, and I wear it as a badge of honor. I love being an Okie. I've got Dr. Tamitha Scove with her solar report, and I have viewer mail tonight. Somebody sent me something very, very sweet in the mail. You can see it right over my shoulder here, right above the W5PYQSL card. You see something hanging on my wall. We're going to show you pictures, close-up pictures of that coming up a little bit later on, and I'm going to read you a letter that I got from a Ham Nation viewer yesterday that came at the most appropriate time. And it touched me, and I need to share it with everybody. And so bear with me when we do that a bit later on tonight, because it just proves that ham radio people are the best people on the planet. George.
Okay, Don, that sounds like a lot of fun there. Whatever you've got hanging on the wall, I couldn't tell from here, but it looked a little suspicious there, so we'll have to
see. You're going to love it. You're going to love it.
And, of course, also, well, I guess to the north is where you are, Val. What's going on tonight?
Yeah, we had snow today. It's April and we had snow. Hey, lots going on. We got a great interview with a really super ham radio club that's celebrating their 70th year. So we'll be talking with that later. And I got my DX report. But also want to let you know I'm kicking off my world tour. No, just kidding. But I don't know if you can see this, everything blue is a presentation I'm going to be doing at ham radio clubs, either via Skype or in person. So I'm going to be giving one on the 12th to an amateur radio club in Indiana. in person, or I'm going to be on Ham Talk Live on the 19th, Metro DX in Chicago, or Orland Park on the 20th, I'm giving one. And on the 26th, the Milwaukee Radio Amateurs Club, they were celebrating their 100-year anniversary, and I'm going to be giving a presentation there. And got a couple in May, and then July, I want to bring this one up because Don, last year I know you were at a ham holiday in Oklahoma. Well, I'm going to be their speaker there this year.
Oh, you're going to love it.
July 27th through the 29th.
You're going to love it. Listen, I hope you have better luck than you did on the flight home than I did, because that was United 898. And if you do a Google search of United 898, you'll find where a crazy woman came from the back of the plane, ran to the front of the plane, and beat up a stewardess with a rock. No kidding. We had to divert. They started squawking 7700, declare an emergency, and go back to Houston to have the law enforcement take her off the damn plane. Been flying for over 50 years. The first time that ever happened to me.
Wow.
So I hope you have better luck than I do.
Well, I'm going to be driving, but important question. Was she an Okie?
I don't know. No, she had some... No, she had an accent. In fact, I saw her in the terminal in Houston, and she looked suspicious to me as I sat, you know, thinking about that later on. So, yeah, United 898. If you Google that, you'll see United 898, okay. A crazy lady. Yeah.
Very cool. Well, I'm looking forward to Ham Holiday. I guess they get about 600 people. So I'll see you guys later on in the segment tonight, and I'll give it back to you, George.
Okay. That sounds like fun, too, Val, and we'll – have you back a little later in the show. I know you got a nice interview lined up for us tonight. Gordo, what are we talking about this week?
Well, we are talking about something that we don't like talking about, and we certainly hope it doesn't happen to anybody in either the chat room or out there in ham radio, and that is a stuck rotator. So, Victor, if you'll go ahead and lead off with that first shot. Nothing worse than a stuck rotator at the tip top of a tall tower. Now, this we'll call an intermediate tower. That's Chip K7JA and Janet's KL7MF's tower in the local area. And after many, many years, the Yaesu rotator froze up. And, well, how do you change it? Well, this is my setup, and luckily I just cranked the tower down and... do a few little things and swap out the rotator. Others that have a rotator that freezes up, this is the old Barry Goldwater beam out here at a military installation coming down. Well, the rotator wouldn't rotate, so the cherry picker gets the tower climber up. He doesn't really have to do much climbing up, but as you'll see, he's got to climb down. And this was one mama antenna. And there, he's got the rotator fixed now that we got the weight off of the tower. So some antennas are easily maneuvered to get that rotator out. But let's take a look and see what happens when you've got an intermediate tower. I mean, this is a big one that Chip and Janet have, just under 100 feet or so. And it is not a crank-up tower. It is well-guide. And... Chip had all of the tools, but he did something before he invited us to come over and give him a hand. And actually, he didn't need much of a hand. He just needed that 13-millimeter wrench, which is the key for getting the tower, actually getting the rotator off of the tower. And he knew he was going to be in good shape because on the earlier rotator that froze up, one that when we brought the rotator down... That was the sound it made, so you knew there was a few extra ball bearings rolling around. Well, it served for many, many years, but he had everything well greased up, so everything came apart just great. So the Yaesu rotator, it is a workhorse, but after years and years, occasionally a ball bearing or two will get loose. Well, this is a new replacement, and he's got all the good lube stuff ready for it, and like good tower climbers. We have all of the fall prevention safety outfits, and Valerie and team will let her better describe all of the accoutrements. But knowing Chip, he really takes good care of all of his gear. So he suits up, and he's got the D-ring on the back, and he's ready to roll. He's got the hard hat, safety glasses, And he's got the little bungee cords. If something should fail, he'll go boing to come back. And he is ready for a little tower work. He's got his favorite shoes that have little ridges on them, which if you're standing up for a long time on a tower, can really help the bottom of your feet. So here we go, up the tower. Now, here is his secret to success. And fellow hams, if you've got a thrust bearing that is supporting the top part of the antenna mast, that is the top part coming through the thrust bearing, the bottom part, which goes into the rotator, you can just see the edge of the rotator above that plate. He anchors the bottom part of that mast with good heavy line. So it's not going to skedaddle either left, right, and nice and tight. And in hopes that the thrust bearing is doing its thing, it should not drop down. So that was the plan. He's got the ropes done ahead of time. They are taut, and he feels it's going to work. Well, we'll find out. So up he goes on the tower, and he's climbing. And, of course, tower experts will tell you, and I'm not a tower expert nor a rotator expert, it's a job getting around the guy lines. And we inspected the guy lines very carefully before he went up there. So he's got to work around that by undoing and redoing. But every time he does that, he's clipped in on another way. And you can see hanging down is a line for the bucket with a new rotator. And he's got the new rotator cable. And he was able to score a Yaesu cable already terminated with the plugs on each end. Came from an R and L. And Roger got him squared away, and it's going to save the day. So there's no major soldering you're having to do up there. Well, he looks happy. It was a nice sunny day, very, very little wind. But as you can see, when he gets up there to the tower top and to where the rotator is, he's got a lot of things he's got to maneuver around. And notice again, he's got the fall preventer on the long bungee cord, well positioned. And he was just as safe as can be going up on his well-guidelined tower. So here he goes. He disappears. And the first thing is get out that 13-millimeter wrench and undo the top part of the rotator. And he was very cautious to make sure that the bottom end of that mass is not going to skedaddle out and things go crunch. He brings up the bucket with a new rotator. He's got the old rotator coming out, and you know the old rotator came out in a breeze. He had to do a little bit of adjustment with a 13-millimeter wrench, but he got it loose, and none of the bolts were tied in so tight that he couldn't get them out. So once he gets the old rotator out, those on the ground, we are the inspectors. As you can see, I was up there. Up there in mind, but not body. That's Susie in 6GLF, Janet KL7MF. They're supervising. And, of course, you got to have a four-legged supervising. That's MC the cat. So we're all watching, and Chip is just doing his thing. He's got his safety glasses on now. He's maneuvering in there real close. He's got the bucket ready to take the old tower. The old rotator out of the good old tower. And they put in the new one, and I'm very happy to say that the mast did not budge an inch. So once he's got the bottom of the mast well secured to the new Yaesu rotator, he now undoes the line, and that took him the longest time out of all the operation because he had it well, well secured. And then the big test, that's Janet making sure that, yep, everything turns as advertised. So that was good news on the tower work. And Chip says the key to success on any type of tower work, of course, is good safety equipment. Number two, pre-planning. And number three, before you put up the new rotator, make sure you've got the Dow Corning high vacuum grease into each one of the receptacles for the bolts going in so nothing freezes up in the meantime. And once we got that lower rotator back down, that was the sound. And, of course, you can tell after years and years and some heavy winds that we've had here that the ball bearings got loose and finally jammed up. So that points out that you don't have to get a big commercial guy out there on a medium-sized tower. And we had a great afternoon, and I just applaud Chip for having everything pre-planned. He had all the right tools and all the safety equipment. So next time that your rotator frees up, if it won't unfreeze, then plan that if it has a thrust bearing that is securely holding the top of the mast or midway up and the bottom of the mast is on the rotator, lash that bottom portion of the mast down and then very carefully remove the old rotator and put in the new one, as we saw here. So that's my story, and let's turn it back to... Who am I going to turn it back to? Let's go to Don or George.
I think it's probably me. You know what you need for a really, really good tower install? You need a really, really good house. You know what you need for a really, really good house? A mortgage. What's it have to do with ham radio? I don't know, but Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans is a sponsor of this episode of Ham Nation, so I'm going to tell you about it. If you're going to have a house, you're probably going to have a mortgage. And the mortgage experience, quite frankly, was not keeping up with the times. It was dated. It needed a client-focused technological revolution, which is exactly why Quicken Loans created Rocket Mortgage. Rocket Mortgage gives you the confidence you need when it comes to buying a home or refinancing your existing home loan. It's very simple. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans allows you to fully understand all the details and be confident you're getting the right mortgage for you. It's convenient. You can fully understand all the details and be confident that you're getting the right mortgage for you. Very convenient. Their trusted partners allow you to share your financial information with Rocket Mortgage at the touch of a button. Powerful. Whether you're looking to buy your first home or your 10th home, Rocket Mortgage is able to perform thousands of calculations in seconds. And based on your income, assets, and credit, Rocket Mortgage can analyze all of the home loan options for which you qualify and find the one that is just right for you and your tower. Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loans. Apply simply, understand fully, mortgage confidently. To get started, go to rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. That is rocketmortgage.com/hamnation. Rocket Mortgage is an equal housing lender licensed in all 50 states, NMLS, consumeraccess.org, number 3030. And Rocket Mortgage, we thank you for being a part of what we do here on Ham Nation. Now, time for the news of the week and the solar update with Dr. T. And then I'll be back after that to share this great letter with you. So let's see what's going on in the news of ham radio this week. From Amateur Radio Newsline Report, number 2109, these are the Ham Nation headlines for Wednesday, April 4th, 2018. Our top story this week comes from New Zealand, where a dozen or so members of the Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Group joined in a weekend effort to find a woman who'd been missing for 3 months.
It began as a training exercise by members of the Amateur Radio Emergency Communications Group, part of the New Zealand Association of Radio Transmitters. But the drill turned real after its participants discovered the body of a young woman who had been missing since December. More than 100 land search and rescue professionals had been deployed in the Ashley River area near Rangiora, just north of Christchurch. AREC section leader Richard Smart ZL4FZ was one of them. The hams were in constant contact with one another over amateur frequencies and with the New Zealand Police and Landsar search team members on emergency channels on the weekend of March 24th and 25th. Their discovery of Emma Beattie's body on a riverbank that second day underscored the value that amateurs' skills bring to such scenes time and again. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF.
Some big birthday plans in New York's Hudson Valley don't involve candles and cake, but you can expect dits and da's.
Samuel Morse is turning 227 years of age this year. Well, okay, he was born on April 27, 1791, so he's long gone. But anyone who's ever known the thrill of CW knows his legacy is a big part of amateur radio life. The QSY Society in Poughkeepsie, New York, will mark his birthday by visiting the estate in their community that had been his home and will be giving a CW demonstration with real QSOs taking place for 4 hours. Scott Dunleavy, W2NTV, told Amateur Radio Newsline, quote, "We try to put on a good show. It's really fun to see the joy on one's face who's been away from the hobby for a while," end quote. People don't forget code, he said, even if they've been away from it for a while. People don't forget Samuel Morse either, or his birthday. So, if you're in the Hudson Valley, New York area on April 28, stop by Locust Grove and raise a fist, gently of course, in honor of the birthday boy. If you can't get to New York, work the special event station. Be listening for the call sign W2M. NCW, of course. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Mike Askins, KE5-CXP.
A global gathering of friends via amateur radio is in the works for April 18th.
On April 18th, World Amateur Radio Day will mark that day when the International Amateur Radio Union was formed in Paris in 1925. There was, of course, no IRLP or Echolink back then, but there is a group of relative newcomers operating on the Western Reflector feeling just as festive over marking the occasion. The World Radio Network, World Friendship Net, is preparing its fourth year as participants in the global event, and it's making sure that all hams, even those who can't get on the HF bands, have a chance to get in on the action. The World Friendship Net will operate nonstop for 12 hours starting 1600 UTC on April 18th, and for the first year, we'll be using a special event call sign, W2W. Those who participate will get a commemorative special event QSL card this year as well. Organizer John DeReike said last year's success has encouraged even more participants this year. The 2017 participation logged 426 check-ins with 45 international stations representing 23 different countries. This year's 12-hour net will be run by 8 different net controllers around the clock. Node 9251 is located on the World Conference server and part of the Nevada Amateur Radio Network. For Amateur Radio Newsline, I'm Kevin Trotman, N5PRE.
Another reminder that the 2018 nominating period for the Bill Pasternak WA6ITF Amateur Radio Newsline Young Ham of the Year Award is now open. You'll find full information and the nominating form on our website, www.arnewsline.org. Just look at the top under the YHOTY tab. For the rest of this week's Amateur Radio News, please listen to the full Amateur Radio Newsline report online on a repeater near you or on shortwave radio station WTWW at 9930 and 5085 kilohertz. And that's all from the Amateur Radio Newsline, your independent source for amateur radio news for four decades and counting at www.arnewsline.org. With Jim Meachin, ZL2BHF, Mike Askins, KE5CXP, Kevin Trotman, N5PRE, Karen Eve Murray, KD2GUT at the news desk in New York, and our news team across the globe. I'm Don Wilbanks, AE5DW. 7-3. We'll see you next time here on Ham Nation. Now here's the solar update with Dr. Tamitha Scove.
There's only one bright region on the sun right now, and it's facing Earth. And yet the HF bands are still struggling. How can this be? Those stories and more in the news this week. Space weather this week is really quieting down. We did have high hopes for region 2703 as it rotated into the Earth view. It had been firing off some low-level flares and even some solar storms, but since then it has really fizzled. It's not even considered an active region anymore, and it hasn't really boosted the solar flux enough to allow you amateur radio operators and emergency responders anything but poor radio conditions, and that's what you're dealing with now, and you will continue to deal with that. Meanwhile, we do have a coronal hole that's following that just off to the east, and that should be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in about a week, so at least you aurora photographers have something to look forward to. Switching to your solar storm conditions and aurora possibilities over the coming week, we are pretty quiet right now, and that's pretty much how we're going to stay. We do have the possibility of a little bit of activity from a remnant coronal hole that's going to be rotating into the Earth strike zone here in the next day, but it's probably not going to do all that much. At high latitudes, NOAA is expecting unsettled conditions with only about a 20 to 30% chance of a minor storm. So you might get a little bit of aurora at high latitudes over the next couple days. At mid-latitudes, we're expecting unsettled to normal conditions with only about a 25% chance of active conditions. So most likely, we're not going to see any aurora at mid-latitudes. But we do have some chance for some solar storming at mid-latitudes here in the next week. Switching to your solar flare and particle radiation storm outlook over the coming week, as we continue to approach solar minimum, I continue to say everything is in the green when it comes to solar flares. We had high hopes for region 2703, but it has since fizzled out, and now we're dealing with a spotless sun. That region has kind of dived a bit and submerged underneath the sun's surface just a little bit, but that's what's causing the solar flux to be so low. You poor amateur radio operators and emergency responders, you are still dealing with a poor radio propagation, and it looks like that's going to continue easily through the next week. So the space weather this week continues to be pretty quiet. Now, even though we have the only bright region on the sun right now facing Earth, it's underperforming. That's pretty much all I can say. So you amateur radio operators and emergency responders, you are still dealing with poor radio propagation conditions, and it will likely continue like that throughout the week. But this region is showing signs of life here and there, so we will continue to keep our eye on it. Now, as far as your GPS operators, you're in really good shape. You should be able to have some very clean signals on the day side. And with the unsettled conditions from this remnant coronal hole that's bringing us a little bit of activity, it actually might stable the atmosphere just enough to give you some good conditions on the night side as well. Now, as far as your aurora photographers are concerned, that same bit of instability will bring some aurora to high latitudes, maybe just a little bit. But for the real strong aurora, you're going to have to wait another week. I'm Tamitha Scove. Thank you for watching.
Very good stuff, of course, from Dr. T. And if you don't subscribe to her on Twitter, you really should. It's at Tamitha Scove. T-A-M-I-T-H-A, not Tabitha, Tamitha with an M, at Tamitha Scove. S-K-O-V, T-A-M-I-T-H-A-S-K-O-V. You definitely should subscribe to her on Twitter. Okay, I want to read this letter to you, but first, because I would rather end this by throwing it to George rather than throwing it to a commercial. Let's hear a word from ICOM, then I'll come back and share this with you. This is very touching.
Advanced technology for advanced communications. Communicating has never been more fun than with ICOM. From D-Star to SDR, ICOM uses the most advanced technology in their radios. The SDR you've been asking for is here. ICOM's new IC7610 is a high-performance SDR with the ability to pick out the faintest signals, even in the presence of stronger adjacent signals. The new ICOM IC7610 is a direct sampling, software-defined radio that will change the world's definition of a SDR transceiver. RF Direct Sampling System, 110 RMDR, independent dual receivers, and dual digicell. Whether you're looking to enter the world of D-Star or need a backup D-Star portable for your Go kit, the ID31A Plus is the perfect radio. Easy to operate, the ID31A Plus is available in silver, red, or gold. Worldwide communications, share pictures and text messages, and it's IPX waterproof, compact, lightweight, and tough. Find out more about all the great new ICOM radios. Visit ICOMAmerica.com/amateur. Going to Hamvention 2018, become one of the 100 lucky winners to take home a limited edition swag kit. Visit ICOM's website to enter into this April contest today.
And you can tune in and enter to win after each episode of Ham Nation. Go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation. Register to win some great swag prizes like T-shirts and hats and who knows what else. Plus, register to win in the monthly grand prize drawing for a new radio. And you can register after each episode of Ham Nation. Well, our lucky winner for March was Andrew N2HUH. He won the ICOM ID51A Plus 2 VHF UHF D-Star Portable. And we've got a new radio for April that's going to be given away. It's the ID5100A Innovative 2-meter, 70-centimeter mobile with touchscreen. It does analog and digital, of course, D-Star. DV dual watch, built-in GPS, SD card slot for voice and data storage, DB and FM repeater list functions, and there's a Bluetooth and Android app available for it as well. So go to ICOMAmerica.com/HamNation after this and each episode of Ham Nation and register to win. Sign up, good luck, and don't forget to follow ICOM America, Inc. on Facebook and Twitter.
I love Don, my 5100, George. I love it. I got it. My 5100 is sitting right here. Love it. You can't see it. It's out of the shot. You can't see it. I want to share something with you, George. This is great. I have talked on, I've made it quite plain. We talked about it a lot that, you know, my son is adopted. We adopted my son, and I'm adopted. I'm an adopted kid as well. And just here recently, in the last couple of weeks, after decades of searching, my wife got me a DNA test for my birthday or for Christmas. And I did it, and I have found biological family. I found a first cousin, and I have a sister. I have a sister. Now, I have been just high as I could be off of this information. My new relatives are amazing. And then apparently last week I mentioned something about adoption, and this letter and this item that is right over my shoulder here came in the mail. So let me share this letter with you. It's from Dennis, KC9ICA, and his wife, Donna. I think Donna probably wrote this. Dear Don, Dawn, and Tyler, we enjoy Ham Nation. We were sorry to hear that Don, that you won't be at Dayton. We look forward to seeing you there. Yeah, me too. I thought I would send you this little radio angel. Vic, pull this picture up. I thought I would send you this little radio angel to look after you. Don, you mentioned on the last show that you were adopted. I understand your son is adopted as well. I adopted my son. Speaking as a mother and grandmother, there could be no greater love. Any woman that experiences labor talks about their pain but later forgets it. I will never, ever forget the pain of wanting a child and not being able to have one. That pain is far worse. It's not forgotten. The only thing that took that pain away was having a child placed in my arms and being told I'm his mother. I'm the mama. I often wondered if I had given birth to a child, would I love him more? And the answer was instant. No. Naturally, I would love my biological child, but the pain of longing is never forgotten, which makes it a very exclusive spot in our hearts for our special child that came into our life. I know you understand when you look at your son. I know the pride you feel and all the love and the love in all that he does. It's not that we don't have days of frustration. We want it all for them. Bottom line, we are a parent and luckier than most. Blessings to you all. With much love, Dennis and Donna. So I wanted to share that with you. That was, I'm touched. The people in this hobby are amazing. And I get emotional. I'm a very emotional person anyway, but to take the time to make something like that and send me this letter, especially now, it came at the best time. So Dennis and Donna, thank you so much. And you see, it's got a ham radio theme because it's got a vacuum tube. Pull it up again. Isn't that just the coolest thing? It's going to be over my right shoulder here in the camera shot, just above the W5PY QSL card on my wall, which has special meaning as well because that was a very good friend of mine. And Mike King is now a silent key. And I love that man dearly. So, thank you, Dennis and Donna. That's just amazing. So, George, everybody, I wanted to share that with you because it's no better people. There's no better people than hams, George.
Yep. And that is a real thing of beauty there, Don. You know,
isn't it?
If you're a ham radio operator, you've got friends just about anywhere you go. You know,
yeah.
that's something some hams told me years and years ago, and it's true. And great news. Glad to hear how all that's working out.
Thank you.
You know, when I find, when I find something new, I like to try it out and share it with others to, hopefully maybe turn you on to something that's new and great. Sometimes maybe it's something new that's not so great. Well, I got something here that our friend Mike, VE3MIC, told me about recently, and I had to try it out for myself. So I got some here. Let's take a look tonight at some heat shrink solder splices. This week on Smoke and Solder, we're going to test out something here that I've never used before. These are waterproof solder sleeves. I bought these from Hood Deal. It's a 50-piece package here, only around $12, so not a bad deal if they actually work out. NTE has a line of these. You can find those at DX Engineering. These are just some cheap ones because I didn't want to buy into a lot of them till I had a little better idea of, you know, what I might could do with them. Now, I don't know what quality these are. I have never used them before. But here's three different sizes. There are actually four sizes that came in that pack I had. And what they are is a piece of clear heat shrink tubing. Then there is adhesive right here toward either end. So when you heat this up, that's going to shrink down. That adhesive will go next to your wire, and that will make it waterproof. Right here in the center, this is not a crimp ring. That's a ring of low-temperature solder. When you heat this with a heat gun, it's supposed to not only seal both ends, but also solder the wire connections in the middle. Now, I haven't had real good luck out of low-temperature solder before, but I've never used anything just like this. So we're going to give it a shot. I've got my doubts because I'm using some pretty heavy wire here. So I've got two pieces of number 10 gauge wire here. This stuff is really stiff. And normally it is, you know, once you get the solder flowing, it flows okay. But, you know, it takes a little heat to get started. So I don't know how well this is going to work. But what you're supposed to do is take the two ends of the wire, butt them together so that the wires are kind of interleaved. Like that. And I'll take some pliers and just kind of squeeze it down so maybe I will be able to get it inside that connector. There we go. We'll center the solder right there over the bare wires. And let's see how this works. I'll start with the solder here and then work toward the ends. That's the way I usually do a piece of heat shrink tubing for something like this. Tubing has started shrinking, but not really seeing the solder melt yet. And this heat gun I'm using, this is a hot air tool. It's actually a reflow workstation that I use with surface mount solder, so I would think it got hot enough. I don't know what temperature you should do these at. I'm going to run it up to about, let's say 500 degrees. Maybe too much, I don't know. There's 700 degrees. Okay, I think I saw something shiny in there. At 700 degrees, we're beginning to melt a little solder there. How about that? I can't tell if this has flowed into the wire strands yet or not. I'm going to hope it has, and I'm just going to go ahead and shrink down the tubing here out to the ends. On some sides there, it just doesn't look like it really melted the solder. Maybe it did. We'll let this cool a moment, and then we'll check it and pull on the wires and see how they held together. Well, it's been a couple of minutes now, and this has had time to cool off enough that I can actually put my fingers on it without getting burned. It doesn't look like it melted through the insulation anywhere. The heat shrink has become a little foggy now that it has cooled back down. We could see a little shiny in there before it started becoming cloudy. You can see a little solder melted right there. But I was thinking the whole ring there would melt and, you know, solder the wires down. That's not what happened, though. So I can't say for sure how good a solder connection we got there. I can pull on it, and it doesn't seem to be giving at all. So it looks like it must have made a tight connection. I guess really I'd need to run a lot of current through this, something that would warm it up a little bit and maybe see if that connection got hotter than the wire out here by itself did. But, yeah. I think maybe this stuff will work. It didn't melt the solder nearly as fast as I would have thought, though. And I don't think this would be my first choice for soldering some wires together or making a crimp connection, because it did take a good bit of time to get that to melt. However, it is waterproof, though, so that could be useful outdoors. I was thinking more using this maybe in the mobile, automotive-type stuff, or things in the field where I needed to do a quick splice. It's not real quick. I don't think you could do this with a cigarette lighter. You might burn up the tubing there. I don't know. A torch. Yeah, you probably would burn up the tubing. But anyway, it worked. So I'll have to try some more of this and get back with you on it in the future. So there you go. It did work. I would have hoped that it would have melted a little better and flowed into the strands of the cable better. But, you know, that was a pretty tough test there. That was 10-gauge wire, really stiff stuff too. So, yeah, it takes quite a bit of heat to solder that gauge of wire. When I ordered the things, I was thinking that it was really a low temperature solder, and you know, maybe I could do this with a cigarette lighter. So I was going to throw them in my toolbox. So if I got out at a transmitter site or something and needed to do a quick splice, you know, I'd have those to use with it. But no, I don't think you could do it with a cigarette lighter, because whether it melted the insulation off or not, I don't think would be as big an issue as the fact that you'd burn your finger before you ever got that thing hot enough for the solder to flow. So I believe you'll definitely need a heat gun. Torch might be a little too much. I thought that the stuff was going to actually burn, but it didn't, you know, so that was good. I guess the big point there is they say it's a waterproof splice, so that's good. But really, you know, I'll probably use something else. I'd rather use regular solder or crimp terminals, something like that, you know, if I have that type of thing to do. But, hey, it did work eventually. A smaller gauge wire probably would work a lot better and a lot faster. And I noticed in the chat room, someone mentioned flux in there. Yeah, if I put flux on the wire, I think that would have helped too. Because normally I would on wire like that, or most any wire really. So there you go. The shrink tubing solder splice, or however you want to say it. That was my experience with it. It works. But wouldn't be my first choice. And like I say, those were cheap ones from China. The better brands, the NTE and all, they might be better. I don't know, because I didn't try those. And speaking of a place you can get the NTE brand of solder splices, I think Don has a message here from that sponsor.
You know, I probably do. And that would be DX Engineering. You know, as the weather gets warmer, it's perfect time to head outside for some portable or mobile operations. Some of the more popular portable transceivers available now at DX Engineering. From Yaesu, the FTM-100DR. It's a dual band, 2 meter, 70 centimeter. C4 FM digital dual band transceiver, giving you an economical way to take advantage of Yaesu's system fusion technology while operating digitally in three modes. Voice data, full voice, or full data. Gives you up to 50 watts of power. Features an extended receive range for added versatility. 500 memory channels are stored on a micro SD card. Simplifies the cloning and data transfer process. The FTM-100DR comes with a built-in GPS unit and logger with APRS functionality. And when confronted with weaker signal strength and audio drop, you just switch to analog FM for effective communication right up to the borderline of the noise level. Go till you run out of string. Kenwood's user-friendly TMV71A is a great radio. It's a dual bander, excellent choice for 2 meter and centimeter, 2 meter 70 centimeter. Gives you powerful dual band performance with intuitive operation, 50 watts of high RF power output, 1,000 multifunction memory channels, dual receive on the same band, 104 code digital code squelch, EchoLink sysop mode for node terminal operation. The TMV71A from Kenwood gives you a handy weather alert feature too for skywarn activities. Front panel detaches from the radio housing to open up a whole lot more installation operations and options. The ICOM ID4100A VHF-UHF dual band digital radio is a great way to get active with D-Star Digital at an attractive price. I want one of these. That is, I've been drooling over the 40. I love my 5100, but I would love the, to me, it's like the perfect mobile. Terminal and access point mode enables you to access D-Star repeater network throughout the internet, regardless of repeater locations. Great for road tripping with your rig. Also receives aircraft 118 to 174 and 230 to 550 plus airband, marine traffic, weather channels, and other VHF, UHF, public safety, and utility communications. Of course, all the airband stuff's on AM. So, yes, if it gives you airband, it receives AM on that band. Choose from multiple scan functions for memory band scan, full scan, band scan, program link scan, duplex scan, tone scan, DR scan, all kinds of scans. Easy to read full dot matrix display and selectable white, green, amber, or blue LCD backlighting to, match your car, make it easier for you to read. It's a great feature. Alinco has a DR735T, again, 2 meter, 70 centimeter mobile transceiver, gives you full duplex for true dual band functionality and cross band repeat. Nobody makes a cross band repeat radio anymore. Not too many people anyway. Well, Alinco does. And the unit's full duplex receiver enables simultaneous transmit and receive within the 2 meter and 440 bands, as well as VHF, VHF, and UHF, UHF receiver capability. Just press the volume knob to select the VFO you want to use for transmitting. Take advantage of easy repeater access, feature manual shift, and offset direction setting, plus preset and programmable auto repeater settings. DX Engineering ships faster than anybody else in the industry. If you get your order in by 10 p.m. Eastern, and if it's in stock, it'll be on a truck headed your way tonight. Proven products and expert advice. DX Engineering literally helps you shrink the globe. Request your catalog or shop online 24/7, 365 at dxengineering.com/hamnation. And if you're up there in the Talmadge, Ohio area, stop by and see them. They're right there in Summit Racing. They got a great shop there in Summit Racing. So if you're a hot rod and ham radio freak, oh, man, it's like Mecca. Everything you want to know about DX Engineering right there at dxengineering.com/hamnation. And Mel, K8KSU, wanted me to remind you to check out something. I've lost it in the chat room now. It's about butt connectors, I believe, all kinds of go to dxengineering.com and look it all up. I'll have to put on my old man glasses and see exactly what it was that she wanted me to tell you about. I've lost it now. I got so excited. But anyway, it's all there at dxengineering.com/hamnation. Go there and be wonderful, I think. Where are we now? Val, save me from myself, please.
I think it's George for the contest.
Is it George for the contest? Do the contest, George. Unmute yourself.
You're muted.
Yeah, I kind of changed that midstream when I realized I forgot the contest.
Oh, so, no.
I wanted to slip it in. And when you mentioned DX Engineering, that kind of reminded me. I've got a nice DX Engineering sport bag that we're going to give to somebody this week. You know, I use one of these for field day. I carry one when I go to Dayton, just about anywhere. This is a nice heavy-duty bag here, too. This is not one of those cheap ones. So somebody's going to be real happy to get that. Let's go over the question again, though, and see what it was. It comes out of Gordo's Extra Class Amateur Radio Study Guide. If a frequency counter with a specific accuracy of plus or minus one part per million reads 146,520,000 hertz, what is the most that the actual frequency being measured could differ from the reading? Would the most be 165.2? Or 14.652, or 146.52, or 1.4652 megahertz. Well, you know, I didn't write the winner's name down here, so we're going to have to come back and tell you who won that DX Engineering sport bag toward the end of the show here. We'll leave you in suspense until then.
Yeah, and butt connectors. They got a video on butt connectors. That's what Mel wanted me to talk about, butt connectors.
Yep.
I'm always happy to talk about butt connectors. Well, you know me.
Yep. Well, you know, I was going to give away one of Bob's books this week, but then I realized...
Give some butt connectors. Give away some butt connectors, for crying out loud. What's wrong with you?
Well, Gordo is not here, so I'm going to give away one of his books. That's what I was thinking.
Even better.
And we're going to make the question a little, well, you should know this. If you're a general, well, you already would know this, and you wouldn't be looking at the study guide probably, but, you know, everyone here is not a general. So the question is, what is the total resistance of three 100-ohm resistors in parallel? Is it 0.30 ohms? Is it 0.33 ohms? Is it 33.3 ohms, or is it 300 ohms? Three 100-ohm resistors in parallel. If you know the answer, send it to me, hamnationcontest@gmail.com, and you could win one of Gordo's books. You'll get to pick out for yourself whichever one it is that you want. So,
I know that one. I know that
one. Yeah, I know. I know you do, but you don't count.
It's butt connectors. The answer is butt connectors.
Yeah. Okay. We'll see if you won next week, Don.
Okay.
Well, I'll be back in a few minutes here, and we'll give away that sport bag there. Yeah, that's kind of was my thoughts on it, too, Victor.
Yeah, we've missed that. Yeah.
Okay. Val, come bail us out.
Yes, please.
Yeah, we may lose our monetization or our sponsors over this show now. we have some very special guests with us tonight. I'm going to be joined here right now with Bill Kilo Kilo 8 Echo. He is the president of the Shenandoah Valley Amateur Radio Club, along with John November 4, Mike. Mike, welcome aboard, guys.
We're here. We're here.
Where are you? There you are.
We are.
Thank you guys for joining us. I know it's late there, but I know I wanted to get you guys on because you guys are celebrating something very special. It's your 70th anniversary of the club. Why don't you tell us a little bit about the club and what you guys, what kind of events you do, and how it all started?
Hey, Bill. Yeah, John, you want the beginning of the club?
Oh, the beginning of the club? Okay, Val. I joined the Shenandoah Valley Amateur Radio Club in 1951 when I was 14 years old. And I was in a little wooden building out on Millwood Avenue. Of course, we have a much better clubhouse now. I've been with the club all these years, except for the first 5 years in my career when I was out working at Sandia National Laboratories in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Our club has done quite well. We have, I'm going to turn it over to Bill here. He's got some statistics that he'd like to pass along to you. And you get to the, go ahead.
Let me, I'll tell you a little bit about the club here. We've got 76 members. It's not a huge club. But of those 76, our average attendance this winter was 31 club members at each meeting. We meet twice a month. So we've got an active club. Our 70th anniversary is a big thing, of course, you know, for a club to be in existence for 70 years. We're going to have a special event station, and I think you've got our card that we're going to send out as one of your picks. And
I think that's slide number 10, Vic, if you want to show that one, number 10. There you go.
Right. That's going to be our QSL card, and special event started tonight, and it'll run to the 14th.
And so you're going to be on a bunch of bands? Are you going to be in all the modes as well?
Yes, we're going to cover, we've got a Dropbox where the club members are able to come in and register for what bands they want to use, what modes they want to use. So yes, we're going to cover many of the bands and the modes.
And so 70 years is a long time for a club to be around, especially now. A lot of clubs are struggling. So what kind of activities does your club do to try and to keep membership and keep your club alive?
Okay, Valerie, this is John. One of the things our club does, we're very active in the volunteer examination program. We have meetings every Sunday, except August and May, due to other conflicts. One of the things we do, I have this little packet here, and show you how good it comes up. This packet contains an older copy of QST magazine, an application for AR membership, a little brochure about the history of our club and what we do, and a membership application. And everybody who comes to our VE sessions and passes something gets one of these packets. And most of the people who come to our VE sections are from around the Winchester, Frederick, Clark, Warren, West Virginia area. And we've picked up a lot of members with this little packet I give out. I make these up myself, and Lauren Clark at League Headquarters supplies me some of the information, aerial information that goes in these things.
Valerie,
I was going to say, you do something a lot of clubs don't do, what I wish more clubs would do. You actually have a club station. And Victor, if you want to show slides 8 through 8C, that's their club station. And, you know, a lot of people starting off in the hobby, they don't have the money to get the radios or the know-how to do the antennas. So that, I think, is really a big plus for your club to have a club station like that. You can talk about the antennas if you like.
Well, we've got every band covered. We've got when you get to the picture of the of one of the right there, one of the stations, two HF rigs with an amp, and of course you see the monitors. We're in Logbook of the World. We have
we have another station called the Blue Room, which is a separate operating location in our clubhouse, which when we have a Virginia QSO party, we have three or four operators out here participating in the VAQP. So we can actually operate three rigs at once from this building.
And what we do, we have 11 VEs, out of the club, out of 72 people. And every time we have a VE, an exam, we always give a tour of the club. So we show them our radios for the people that are coming in taking the exams.
Well, I love the packet idea and having the club station. Now, do you guys contest from that station too?
Yes, we do. One of our members just in the Virginia QSO party got 130,000 points.
Very nice. And I do recognize the The November 4 Mike call. John, you're a very avid contester. Over the years, just put a rough idea on how many contacts you've made in your in the hobby.
Rough guess. Probably in the hundreds of thousands, I would guess. I've been doing contesting since I got my general in May of 1953. I got out of the novice ranks, and I don't have too big a contest station. I don't do as much as I used to because of my age. I'll be 81 in August, and I just cannot sit very long in the chairs like these 40, 50-year-old guys do. But we won a lot of contests. We got a lot of plaques that we picked up through the years. And I also belong to the Potomac Valley Radio Club, of course, and the National Capital DX Association and the North Shenandoah DX Association and, of course, this club. So we still get on. We still make points in the contest, but not to the value, not to the area, but not to the degree that we used to do. Just due to when you get 81 years old, things tend to slow up a little bit.
I can imagine. That's why we multi-app here. But I know we have a bunch of other photos if you want to show slides 1 through 7, Victor. And you guys can kind of tell us a little bit about each of those slides if you can. If not, I have the info on them too.
That's a great slide. Megan, who just got her tech, and Audrey, who just upgraded to general on the last exam in March.
And the lady is Sandy, KF4EKA, holding the two ladies.
She's our social activities director and just keeps us on a straight and narrow path there. But that's one of the other things about growing a club is getting the families in and getting the young people involved in radio. That's Tom AF2D at one of the radios in our club room. That's a VE session. We, like I said, I don't know if I said, but we had 34 test takers in the last 3 months come through here.
Wow.
For our monthly test. And our VE manager, the head VE, Alan Mowick, WA2 RPX, he's done 250 VE sessions.
He is on the honor roll for QST.
Yeah.
You look in QST where they have the honor roll for the different divisions. He is second in the Roanoke division.
There's wow. John. There's John at our Ham Fest. We have the first Sunday in August in Berryville, Virginia, Clark County, which is right next to us here in Winchester. And we have the largest Ham Fest there in the area.
And we've had that Ham Fest since 1951. It's always on the first Sunday of August.
That's our charter members. The plaque was from our charter members. And I was lucky enough to know one of those charter members when I joined the club in 2008.
I know all of them except for one.
There's Audrey at one of the club stations. Like I said, she just got her general.
I'm at 30 now.
And she got 130 contacts, 130 in the Virginia QSO party, 130 counties and cities. And that's a bunch of some members putting up the a beam that we put up on our field day. We have a field day. We're 3A, and we were ninth in Virginia. And we were the top third of all in the U.S. for 3A.
That's a picture of our clubhouse. When I was 14 years old, I was standing on the subfloor of that clubhouse and was being built. And one of our club members has got a picture of it I'd love to get, but I don't know if we can find it or not. But I remember when I was a junior in high school when that was being built.
And we're grandfathered in the city, of course, and so we can have our antennas. We don't have any zoning problems or permits because we've been here before all the houses in this area was.
Yeah, that's a nice looking shack.
I might mention
very
that
nice shack.
Yeah, the guy responsible for most of that is behind the scene here, Gary K4GJF. He's done a lot of work putting the station together.
Yeah, Gary refused to get on camera, so. One day.
That's his labor of love. That's the ARL table at our Ham Fest. of course, we have the ARL table, and we have our last Ham Fest, or last August, we had 1,500 paid admission, 220 tailgaters. There's a club meeting a couple meetings ago. We're all intent watching maybe the Virginia QSO party.
I think, yeah, from Gordon.
Maybe Gordon come up and did the QSO party brief. And you can see the young kids there, young boys.
And more importantly, nobody's asleep. So it must have been a really good presentation.
We try. That's one of our keys to keep an active club, is have a good presentation.
I mean, it's good, and you're doing twice a month, so that keeps, you know, you're doing things right, and so other clubs out there struggling, take note, you know, it's really good. And I want to give a special congratulations to Sandra and Audrey. Congratulations, Audrey, on getting your general. I know that's not easy. It took me two tries. And Sandra, welcome to Ham Radio. You're going to love it. Also, everybody, make sure you work Whiskey 4 Radio. You're starting now, and you're going through the 14th, right?
14th, that's correct.
Yeah, so get out there, guys. Help them out. Make some QSOs with their special event station and help them celebrate this club. We need to make sure we keep our clubs alive. That's how you funnel and get new hams into the hobby. And you guys are doing it right. And I thank you guys for staying up late with us and joining us here tonight. And congratulations.
Thanks for having us on.
Valerie, we'll see you.
Yeah, see you guys in Dayton. Can't wait. All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
All right, it's time for DX Report. Hang on, I got to get it up here. Okay, it's time for Val's DX Report, okay? Coming up, we've got a really big one. This is very rare. Very rare DX, St. Brandon. They left Mauritius and they're heading towards St. Brandon right now. You can see the website down below where if you want to track them, you can. Hopefully, they'll be on the air late tomorrow night, and they'll be there through the 17th. There's them with some of their gear. I think that's bread. I'm not sure. A lot of water and a lot of bread. And there's their boat, loading up on the boat. So it's not that big of a boat, but looks like they're hopefully in calm waters. Also coming up, we have Wake Island. Yeah, you're reading that right. That's April 15th to July 15th-ish. We're not sure on the, you know, the exact date, but he's working there on Wake Island, and that's a pretty rare one. I know Jerry went there, 2014? Three, four years ago they went there. So look for that one. And he'll be there again for 3 months, then off for a month and back on, but he's working, so he'll be on the air sporadically. Tuvalu coming up April 14th through the 21st. And that's just one gentleman going there, I believe. And he's only going to be there for a week. So if you need Tuvalu, keep your ears to the radio. Also Nepal, April 20th through the 27th, the 9 November 7 Whiskey Alpha. He'll only be there a week as well. Beautiful photo there. That's gorgeous. And contests this weekend. We got a lot of CUSO parties coming up. So we got Mississippi CUSO Party, Missouri CUSO Party, Texas Parks on the Air, Florida Parks on the Air, and the Polish DX contest. So get on the air this weekend. You'll be able to make a lot of CUSOs. Next weekend is New Mexico, Georgia, and North Dakota CUSO Party and the ARRL Rookie Roundup. So you newer hams who've never tried contest or have never contested or are new, or your older hams who have never been in a contest, consider getting on for the ARRL Rookie Roundup. Everybody can play, actually. Rookies can be in a single op category. They can be in a multi-op category. Non-rookies can play. They can only speak with rookies, but they have their own single op category. And what they consider a rookie is anybody who's first licensed in 2016 through 2018. So if you just got your license in the last couple of years, you're eligible. If you've been licensed longer, but you've never made a CUSO in a contest before, then you can get on and be in the rookie category. And the exchange is pretty simple. It's your name and your two-year digit of when you were licensed. So if you're licensed in 16, your two-year digit would be 16. Your state, Canadian province, or Mexican call area, or if you're, you know, anywhere else, you would just give DX, the letters DX. So there's a couple examples there for you. So rookies can work rookies and non-rookies, and non-rookies can only work rookies. And this contest is on N1MM, so if you're a little unsure, this is a good one to practice out on. Upload N1MM. I do have a how-to video on my YouTube channel. If you just type in NV9L, you can find my channel. And I do have a how-to install and set up your log for a contest. So it's fairly easy. And get on the air and make some cues. And that's all I've got for this week. So I'm going to head it over to Amanda, see what's going on in the chat room.
Well, thank you, Val. I'm going to have Gordo was talking about antennas and antenna towers. Jeff is going to demonstrate real quick. We've got the, here, let me put it up here. We've got the bungee thingy. We're going to show you what you use that for when you're holding your tools on the tower. You see how long this is? It's extremely long. But Jeff says this is a lifesaver because he has fumble fingers and he constantly drops his wrenches when he's up on the tower. And if you guys don't have these, get them. They're about 2.5-3 feet long. And then it also, it hangs lower than all of your important parts on your body, such as your knees or anything else. So when it's clanging against as you're climbing the tower, it's not going to hurt you as well. So it's important to have those. All right. Let's go to a couple of other announcements here. Dan, AC8NP, wanted us to know that he has two new hams licensed in their area. That is KE8JJJ, who is AJ, 12 years old, and KE8JJK Caleb, who's 21. Congratulations for getting licensed. Let's see. Another funny story. This Don, this one is for you about butt connectors.
Yes.
One day I was talking on the radio and I was walking through our ham shack and I stepped on a butt connector and I was screaming through the radio, "Oh my gosh, I stepped on a butt connector," but I did not say butt connector, and I really embarrassed myself. And it rhymes with
we know what it rhymes with. We know what it rhymes with. We know exactly what it rhymes
so
with.
Embarrassed, you guys. I was so embarrassed. All right, that's my embarrassing story. Again, censored. All right, one other thing, just another, since Val was a great club, by the way, Val, thanks for bringing them on. Just a reminder, if you want to give a club presentation and we can't be there in person, guess what? We will Skype with your club. So reach out to us and we love to do that stuff. Let's see. What else do we have? Third annual Greater Midwest Radio Show. It's a ham fest sponsored by the Amateur Radio Association of Nebraska. That's going to be April 28th at the Adams County Fairgrounds in Hastings, Nebraska. I also have a flyer here for the Green Country Ham Fest, April 13th and 14th. This is also the ARRL State Convention. So look for that in Claremore, Oklahoma.
It's a great ham fest.
Is it?
It's a great, I have not, but I have friends who go all the time. It's a great ham fest. If you're in that area, go. Joe Eisenberg, KZRO-NEB, who is the kit editor for CQ, he goes all the time because he just lives in Nebraska, not too far away. So he goes all the time, loves it.
Oh, absolutely. You guys don't miss that one then. And let's see, Val, I have a couple of questions for you. Spike wants to know, are people just not confirming contacts to QRZ any longer? Is it a dead site? Should I have LOTW instead?
Well, a lot of people use LOTW because that's where most of the awards are. If you're going for, you know, your DXCC awards or your, you know, your challenge, VUCC, a lot of that's on LOTW, so that's what most people use. I use them all. My logs are on QRZ. My logs are on LOTW, so I use them all. I don't use EQSL, but I put my logs in a lot of places. I put on QRZ Club Log and LOTW, just so I help out the, you know, if anybody needs confirmations or OQRS, you know, and things like that through Club Logs. So, but yeah, I think more and more people are getting over the fear of LOTW and the matching. You know, something tells me, you know, with this whole blockchain technology, I could see that really being a cool thing for QSL. So it's all public record. And I think that would maybe be the future for this. But yep, LOTW is where it's at. I do have 3-part series on my YouTube channel that I've shown on the Ham Nation. Maybe I'll go ahead and do reruns on that. So you guys can, for those of you guys that haven't done it, it's not as hard as you think. It's just a little intimidating, but pretty easy.
It is indeed. And the other thing is that we get so many new people that watch the show and then decide to get their license, and then they find out about LOTW. They want to know about it again. So definitely relist those, and maybe people can catch up on it. The other thing I'd like to, there's a two-part thing here. I like what you're saying about that being, having all of the contacts public, because it would be so cool for somebody to be able to look at what their father or their mother, what they had been able to work during their lifetime, maybe, and they weren't a ham, but they can find out, oh my gosh, my mom was so into this that she worked all of these countries. I think that would be really cool. Second,
and for contesting too, you can have pretty much immediate results. No one can change their logs. You know, it's all there live, real time.
Absolutely. So now the next question came from Don WB3BJU. He says, is there a place to enter a signal report for LOTW? I guess it's just not required. As long as they know you made the contact on the frequency, you're good to go in LOTW. Is that correct?
Yeah, I really don't do the entry part on LOTW because I always, I'm using N1MM or I have my DX Lab suite for my logging. So those put the signal reports in it. But yeah, I don't recall in because there is a place where you can manually enter your logs into the TQSL menu to LOTW, but I don't recall. But yeah, it's not going to kick it back if you put 5.9 and the other guy put 5.7, you know. And it's not going to kick it back. I think it's 15-minute window. So if he has, you know, 000, you know, 12 UTC and you put 0020 UTC, that's 8 minutes apart. It's still going to give you a confirmation.
Yeah, exactly. And the other cool thing is that you don't have to have the exact frequency. As long as your two contacts match and you are on 20 meters at the same time, they call it a good contact, correct?
Yeah. And I think it is in the right mode band, call signs, and I think a 15-minute window. I'm not positive about the 15-minute, but I'm pretty sure it's 15-minute window.
I think it is too. All right. I didn't have any questions for the other hosts. We had missed Val because she wasn't here last couple of weeks. So great to have you back. And let's see. Let's go over some nets. Let's go over the digital ones first. We have 14 Charlie for D-Star. We have TAC 311 for DMR. And we have Dewdrop In for Echo Link. Also, we have both HF nets running tonight as long as conditions cooperate. We have 7192. Kevin's running that one, and 3908 on 70 meters. And Steve is wonderful enough to come back and help us with that one until 20 meters opens again at night. So everyone, get out there on the radio. Now, let's see. George, you're running this show tonight. Over to you.
Okay, Amanda. Good to see you again this week as well. You know, a little earlier I asked the question, and we're going to give away that DX Engineering Sport Bag. Well, our winner for this week is Larry Hall, KD0RIU, and he knew the answer about 146.520000 hertz. And, you know, what's the most the frequency could rise and still be within plus or minus one part per million? Larry said it was 146.52 hertz. And Larry's about the only one who said that. There were a few others, but a lot of people got that one wrong there. So tough question, I guess. Anyway, it's something you're going to need to know if you're going to take the extra exam. So get one of Gordo's books and bone up on that. He tells you exactly how to do it right there. Thanks for being here tonight, everyone. We're glad you could join us again. Before we go, let's go around the horn one more time. Don, anything you want to mention besides butt connectors?
Nothing specific. Thanks. I'm thrilled about this. I'll give you a little closer look. You can see the Angel's halo has slipped, which again is quite appropriate. But anyway, this is just awesome. So best hobby in the world with the best people on the planet. So there's my little radio angel.
Okay.
I love it.
I do too.
They should make those and sell those. Those are cool. Right? A lot of hens would buy those.
I love the fact that it's a vacuum tube. I mean, it's the coolest thing.
And the little Christmas heart ornaments and everything. I mean, it's awesome.
And the little heart on the front, it looks like it's copper. It's metal. It's definitely a metal.
Yep.
So
look for those at a ham fest near you.
Yep. And right, so. Met your sister. That just kind of breezed right by that one. I
never looked while my parents were alive. My dad passed in 91. I know we're running way late, but I want to show this just real quick. My dad passed in 91, my mother in 95. And when we were cleaning out their house, I found my final decree of adoption, changing my last name from Poe to Wilbanks. And so I did the DNA test, and the last name Poe in Oklahoma City was one of the search criteria. And I had two hits. One was turned out to be my sister, and the other turned out to be my cousin. All three born to a birth mother or birth mothers, because we're not full siblings, obviously. Missy and I are cousins. Me and Jeff Missy and I are sisters, brother and sister. Jeff is a cousin. But anyway, all three shared that last birth name of Poe. So we're doing a lot of digging and I don't know if we'll find out anything more. If we don't, we're perfectly thrilled with finding each other. And Missy, my half sister, she found a half brother who lives in Denver, who was also born in Oklahoma City, who is apparently on her father's side. And Jeff and I are on her mother's side. So she hit the lottery. She found two brothers out of the whole thing. So if you're adopted or have any inkling at all to do a DNA test, by all means, do it. The one we did, and this is by no means a commercial or endorsement, but we did Ancestry.com. And it's just the one that we did. And there's a TV show on TLC called Long Lost Family that is sponsored by Ancestry.com. And they are reuniting people using the power of that DNA test. And we're seriously thinking about putting an application in for the show.
Oh, you should. Absolutely.
We are. Yeah, we're certain. But my world has changed in a million different ways, all of them good. So there you go. The angel's watching out over me.
Oh.
Well, any final words from you?
No, just make sure you get on the air with the Whiskey 4 Radio, that special event station. And if you do see them, spot them so we can all find them.
Yeah.
I want to know.
And, of course, check into our nets.
Yes.
What is that over your left shoulder back there? I see something way back there behind you with looks like a big knob. Right.
That's a picture of me. Oh, no, that's not a picture of me. Never mind.
Yeah.
What is that?
Yeah, you see, put your finger on it. Yeah.
That's a CD player.
That's for the 40-meter full-size antenna. That's a rotor.
Oh, okay.
That's fancy. Wow.
That's for the full-size. We got a full-size on 40. Yeah, wow. I don't know who makes it. Hang on. It's an old Telrex, Jerry tells me. Telrex.
Fancy. Fancy schmancy.
Well, swanky. Over my left shoulder here, I have a chicken.
Yeah. The chicken?
A chicken, yeah.
That chicken's seen better days.
Oh, my chickens are doing good.
I believe the freshest state has passed on your chicken.
Amanda, you want to give us a chicken lady report before we go?
I will. And if I open this door right behind me, you'd hear them all squawking. 16 healthy baby chicks are getting their feathers in. I have to make an announcement since you brought up a rotor. Anybody, anywhere, Jeff and I are looking for a Yaesu 800 DXA rotor used. We'll pay cash, so let me know. Also, Don, I was so happy that you found your half-sister, but at the same time, I was kind of sad because I thought, I have found my brother from another mother because Don and I are so, we love talking to each other, and I just love Don so much, so I am going to share you, but it's
okay.
Okay. So
yeah, you're my adopted little sister for sure.
Oh, thank you.
Love you to death.
One other thing, get to your Skywarn classes. That's it.
Yeah,
I'm done.
Yes. Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Okay.
Springtime is coming.
Yep.
NOAA, is that where you get them? And you go on NOAA.org and can find them.
Yes, absolutely. NOAA.gov and a lot of your Aries groups sponsor these. So look for them. I'm going to like three different ones because I'm a regional emergency coordinator here for Aries. So I go to them and talk about amateur radio and how we use amateur radio to give our Skywarn reports. Yep. But yep, it's always a fun time. I learned something new, even though I've been to 1,000 of them.
Love them.
Me too. I love storms.
Mm-hmm. Well, thanks everyone for joining us tonight. It's been a fun show. We'll be back again next week at the same time right here on the TWiT Network. And I guess that'll do it for this week. So 7-3.
88.